As I am planning what to preach week after week, I first look to the suggestions offered by the Revised Common Lectionary, which our church and many other churches, by the way, use to guide our worship themes throughout the year. You're likely aware that the lectionary offers for every Sunday a reading from the Old Testament, a psalm, a gospel reading, and another New Testament lesson. After reading through all of the scriptures several times and jotting down some notes or some questions I have, I begin to consider where we are as a church or as a community in our journey. And then I try to ask myself, what difference would it make to hear this word on a given Sunday? That naturally guides the selection. But I do have my own bias. And that bias is that I have this natural inclination to pick the gospel lesson almost every time. See, these gospel stories, they're incredible stories about the life and ministry of Jesus, about people who were so inspired to follow him that they left everything and traveled with him. They're stories about lives changed, about people who were blind getting their sight back. These are amazing stories, and I love to preach them. And frankly, don't judge me for this, they're a little easier to preach on. See, the narrative style of the gospel lessons naturally allow me to see myself in the story. Perhaps the same is true for you. And so what happens naturally during the sermon time when we select the gospels is I see myself in the story, you see yourself in the story, and we sort of compare notes during that dialogue between preacher and people. So despite my love for the gospel stories, I know full well that there's a lot of other Bible other than the gospels. And when we study the entire breadth of scripture, not simply our own favorite passages, we are the better for it. That's one of the great gifts of the Revised Common Lectionary. It forces the preacher, and all of us, frankly, to read and study and learn from those texts that it's all too easy to avoid. So in reading the lectionary text for today, I thought, well, I'd rather not preach on any of those. Nothing jumped off the page, so to speak. But my mind changed when I read these texts with the rest of the staff. See, I started a practice recently, and it's frankly not one I've done before in my ministry. During our weekly meetings, the pastoral staff and I, we read all of the scriptures for the upcoming Sunday. And even though I normally have a vague idea about where I want to head with the sermon, it's always refreshing to receive what the other pastors hear as we read these scripture texts together. And these group reflections, so to speak, are always uplifting. And truth be told, a few of them make it into the sermon. So I came to staff meeting last week, and as I said, I was scratching my head and wondering, what am I going to do with these? What are we going to do with these texts that the lectionary suggests? As we read scripture together, and as the pastoral staff and I talked together about us as a church and where we are in our journey and how these scripture texts might intersect, this gospel text really came alive for me. In today's section of Matthew, Jesus continues his Sermon on the Mount. And in the verses we read today, Jesus presents a series of specific interpretations of the law and then contrasts those with a new way of understanding. He begins these statements with, "You've heard it said this, but now I say that." You've heard that it was said, "You shall not murder." But now I say to you, if you are angry with your brother or sister, if you insult them, if you say you fool, you will be liable to the fires of hell, Jesus says. In other words, yes, murdering someone is one way to kill the relationship, pardon the pun. But you can injure their spirit, their humanity, through an angry attitude and careless insults. Jesus says, "You've heard it said that you shall not commit adultery." But then he takes it a step farther, explaining that we can also be unfaithful in our relationships by sexually objectifying one another. Through these specific examples of human behavior, Jesus shares with us what the law says about how we can damage conflictive relationships, and then he gives us fresh insight into how we might mend these relationships. And here, I believe, is where Jesus really lays it all out for us. "Before bringing your offering to church," he says, "go and reconcile yourself to the one whom you have hurt, and then come back and give your gift to God." Why do I think this is so key? Because God has created us to live in relationship with one another. And when these relationships are broken, when we are separated from one another, we are separated from God. Jesus indicates that reconciliation with God cannot be separated from reconciliation with one another. And for real reconciliation to occur, we must not only acknowledge that we have committed an offense against someone, we must also value the relationship enough to seek restoration of that particular relationship, face to face, person to person. It's been going around on social media for a few days, and boy, oh boy, are people riled up about it. There's this video making the rounds, perhaps you've seen it, where a woman on a plane reclines her seat, and the man behind her is so annoyed that by doing so, she's invading his space. So the man begins repeatedly punching the back of her seat. Some have commented, "There's only so much room on a plane. You can't recline your seat into the lap of the person behind you. The man is right for retaliating against her." Others have said, "You know, she purchased a seat on a plane and that seat reclines. She's within her right to recline her seat as it's made to do." Now, I have my own feelings on this. But I have to tell you, my very first thought when I saw all of this come about on social media, my first thought was, you know, a 20-second conversation probably would have avoided the whole thing. "Excuse me, I'd like to recline my seat, but I don't want it to be uncomfortable for you." "Oh, by all means, go right ahead. Thanks for asking. But maybe could you just recline it halfway? I'm trying to work on my laptop." "Sure thing." Am I crazy, or is it just not that difficult? Do we value one another enough to realize that our lives are intertwined with one another by virtue of our being community together, our being a human family? If we do value one another enough, we will seek restoration and reconciliation, person to person, face to face. And I can't say for sure, but I think it's because of our hyper-connected world today that it's so easy for us to damage relationships with one another. Now that we interact with so many people so many times a day through phone, email, text, social media, it seems to me that we have that many more opportunities to wreck our relationships. We used to have to wait until Thanksgiving to get into it with Uncle Frank. Now we can do it at any time. So how do we find common ground in the midst of our differences? Even during these challenging and divided times and uncertain times, how do we create space for meaningful dialogue and understanding? One way we do this, I believe, is to open ourselves to the movement of the Spirit and focus upon that which unites us. God's undying, unrelenting love for all of God's children. And let that be the catalyst through which we work through our disagreements. I heard a story last week about a couple who would argue all the time. They'd been married more than 30 years, but they were constantly at one another. Both of them had strong personalities, sharp tongues, and quick tempers. One evening, they engaged in yet another heated and emotionally charged fight. The wife, reaching her breaking point, decided to pack up a few things and move out. She placed her suitcase upon the bed and feverishly began putting clothes inside of it. Then her husband grabbed his suitcase, put it upon the bed, and started packing as well. With a huff, she asked him, "What are you doing?" He replied, "The same thing you're doing. I'm packing." The wife said, "And where in the world do you think you're going?" Her husband replied, "I don't know, but I'm going wherever it is that you're going." Whatever we may disagree on, most often it's not enough to separate us. We are bonded by a love far greater than ourselves. Now let me be clear. There may be times when you need to walk away from a relationship. Abuse is never okay. And sometimes we need to get out. Sometimes the differences are far too great, and to maintain our own sanity, we have to separate. But most of the time, I believe that relationships can be and should be restored. I believe this is such an important word. As our larger culture seems intent on building walls of division, we, as individual followers of Christ and together as a church, we have an opportunity to build bridges of reconciliation. Jesus, the one whom we claim to follow, he confronted head-on those who would harm him and his ministry. But he did so with determination and compassion. Jesus knew that within every human being was dignity and worth. So he showed compassion to all, especially to those that were difficult to love. Church, in these challenging times, as we seek to be agents of love and grace and justice on behalf of all God's children, we must do so in ways that are compassionate and bring healing and dialogue and unity and reconciliation. So now I have to ask. You knew I was getting around to this, didn't you? Do you have a relationship that needs mending? Might you hear the call of Christ to pick up the phone, to have a cup of coffee, to grab lunch, and offer forgiveness? To be sure, offering forgiveness doesn't mean that in an instant the hurt is gone or that the relationship is suddenly restored. But it is a way that we can let go of a little pain and bitterness. Because, friends, I believe that forgiveness is an act of kindness, often toward ourselves. I believe that when you forgive a person that has wronged you, you set a prisoner free. And sometimes that prisoner is you. It's not an easy task, that's for sure. But forgiveness and reconciliation and restoration are crucial for God's will to be done on earth as it is in heaven.